Well, hi there. My family's coming out on stage with me this morning. I wanted to introduce you to them, let you see who they were. So coming up here, guys. Now, this is my wife, Heidi. I told you all last week, if you were here last week, that I'm married way above my head. And we have a good time together. We've been married almost 18 years, which means she's put up for me with 18 years, which I wake up every morning and go, really? Why? And we have a good time together. We've got a great family. This is my son, Andy. Now, if you watch us walk, if you watch Andy and I walk around and just hanging out, you're going to know that he's my son. It's not going to take long to figure out that he walks like me and he kind of stands like me. We've kind of got this frumpy standing look, you know, and I figured out something. He's 14 years old. By the way, say hi, Andy.
Hi.
I was so full of enthusiasm. He doesn't know what I'm doing up here. I just told him they were coming on stage with me. So, I figured out in the last couple of weeks, he eats like me, which is expensive, you know. And so, you know, there's no denying it. If you hang around us for too long, that he really is in my image. He's a lot like me. He looks like me. He acts like me. He talks like me. He loves baseball. He loves sports like me. He does bad in math like me. That was kind of the story of my years that going through school was, yeah, math bad, art bad, didn't do very well. He is just like me. His study habits, I mean, you know, what's crazy about our lives is that the things that drives my wife crazy about me drive my wife crazy about Andy. Now, maybe you don't have that in your family, but in our family, that's the way it works, you know. Now, this is my daughter, Alex. Say hi, Alex.
Hi.
She's wonderful. She is just like her mother. Okay, she looks like her mom, she talks like her mom, she acts like her mom. She is, you know, Heidi was the valedictorian of her class. Isn't that good? Woohoo! You know, like I said, I married somebody who was smart. Alex is a great student. She gets straight A's, and she is so well organized. See, when I married my wife, what I didn't know that I got in the package was a wife who would always keep my stuff in the right place for her. You would not believe the number of things that she has organized right out of my life. Hey, let me explain. I'll come home and I'll say, "Hun, do you remember that one thing that I used to have?" "Yeah, I remembered. I put it away." "Well, where's away?" "Let me think about that." What that means is I'm never going to find it. It's gone forever. It's been put in a box and given to Goodwill or something like that, and it's gone because she is great at organizing. I just don't know where the stuff ends up when she organizes it. Well, I have found out about my daughter, Alex, that she is meticulously like her mother in this, okay? We played a game the other night, and when we came to the table, if Andy would have set up the game, the game pieces and everything would have been all over the place, okay? It would have been disorganized. Alex had every little chip in its perfect place. They were all stacked just right. I mean, the board, it was immaculate. You didn't want to play the game because it looked so good. And I found out, we were coming this morning, and I was asking her to remind me some things that she's done where she's like her mom as an organizer. And this was her response. "Mom's not an organizer. I'm the organizer." I found out this week, her mom had done her laundry and put her clothes in her drawer. And she pulled all her clothes out of the drawer and reorganized it so that they were set up by days this week, okay? Now, Andy and I, this is how we decide what we're going to wear. What's clean? If it's not on the floor, well, maybe if it is on the floor, it's okay, you know? But for Alex, boy, she's got it perfectly organized. I mean, she is really the image of her mother. She is a reflection of her mom, and she's a great girl, and I love Alex. And this is our son, Josiah. Can you say hi? Say hi. He's like, "I don't even see you out there." Josiah, we're still trying to figure out, but he looks like mom. He looks like me in some ways. He's, you know, we've already figured out he's got my cowlicks on the back of his head, so he's going to have the little alfalfa thing for the rest of his life. He's trying to figure out what that microphone is. But what we figured out about him is that he is really an unbelievable reflection of Andy. And basically, the biggest way is in the way he loves sports, and specifically basketball. See, Andy played basketball at St. John's Lutheran School, and while he was playing basketball at St. John's Lutheran School, Josiah had to go, you know, track into every game with mom, which was a terrible thing for my wife, because as the game was going on, Josiah didn't want to watch. He wanted to play. And she had to constrain him. As all these boys are playing basketball, he wanted to play basketball. And so he would stand there. Well, when the game was over, he'd run out, ball, 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 and he'd go pick up the ball. And then he would just hold it underneath the basket like he was going to shoot. Now, the basket's 10 feet tall. He's this tall. But he's going. And so we bought him a basketball goal, right? A little kid-sized basketball goal. The dude shoots for hours. I mean, he would just stand there shooting baskets nonstop. And the reason he does that is because he spent so much time watching his brother. And now it's just any ball. If there's a ball anywhere, you know, we'll be walking through a store. There will be a picture of a ball that's three departments away. And he's going, ball, ball, ball. Because, you know, he just really has picked this up. He is really a reflection of who Andy is, because Andy tends to be a reflection of who I am. So this is my family. They're good people, and we love being part of Genesis Church, love being part of this. And I just asked them to come up so I could kind of introduce them to you and kind of set the stage for what we're talking about. So wave bye, and you guys can go have your seats. This morning, we're going to be looking at how God created people. And really dealing in the midst of that, of how God gave all of us our purpose and our meaning and our value in life. It really flows from God's creation of us as human beings and the fact that we are created special. We've been talking about the story of God. I really believe that the first few chapters of the Bible are absolutely 100% true. I really believe that everything in the Bible is true. But I really believe that the way God gave us the first few chapters of the Bible, as he tells us about creation, as he tells us about how this earth and this universe and we came to be, he did it in such a way, he revealed it to Moses in such a way that it's in a great story form so that we could feel what was going on, so that we could experience it and encounter it and understand it on that level. I don't believe that God was trying to give us a science explanation. I don't think it is against science. I just don't think that was the main issue going on as God gave the first few chapters of the Bible. I just really think that God ultimately was trying to let us see what he has done in the creation of this universe in a story. And so we've been talking about the fact that, are doing a series of messages on creation called The Story of God. Because here's what I know to be true. That ultimately this is God's story. It's his deal. It's about him. Everything about this universe, everything about this planet, everything about you and me ultimately is about him. And he has started this story not because he had to. God didn't need to do anything. He is perfect in and of himself. He doesn't need us. But for some reason, he chose to create us for himself to tell his story, to show his glory, to show his splendor. And as he did that, he invited us, he created us, and then he has invited us to be involved in that story as small players, as small characters in this huge story. And last week, we looked at the fact that when he created the universe, when he created the stars and just the unbelievable hugeness and glory and beauty of this universe, he did that almost like he was creating a stage, almost like he was creating a set. But that set had to be big enough to hold his story. He needed a set that really on some level helped us see how incredible he was. And the only set that worked was this universe. And when I stop and look around, I stop and look at the stars and I look at the beauty. I'm overwhelmed by the wind yesterday. I ought to stop every time I am awed by creation. I need to look at the creator that is behind it and realize he is the one who built this set, and he did it to show us himself. And we started this church, Genesis Church, and I'm really excited about what we've been doing, and I'm excited about you being here. I'm really glad you're here today. We started this because we just really believe that God has an incredible story. He's invited us to be a part of it. But there are a lot of people, even right now, who aren't in church, who aren't checking God's story out, and they don't know his story. And we just want all of Eureka and all of this world to know his story. And so if you've already plugged into the story of God, man, that's awesome. We're thrilled with that, and we hope you'll come along for the journey with us and be part of this, because what we really want to do is we want to let this whole area know the story of God. That's why we started with the name Genesis Church. We just felt like it was a way to say, hey, new beginnings, a great place to start. But it starts when I come to realize this isn't my own little story. It is God's story, and I need to plug into his story, not be the star of my own little nothing play. And so this morning, we're looking at the fact that God created people. He created the first two people, Adam and Eve, and he did it in his image. That's why I kind of brought my family up, because I just really think that God did a really cool thing. There are a lot of things that are in creation that help us get a little glimpse of what's going on in the Bible. For example, the fact that my children are really in our image, in our likeness. They look like us, they act like us, they talk like us, helps us see just a little bit of what God is talking about when it says he created Adam and Eve. He created men and women in the image of God. We look like him on some level. We act like him on some level. Now, we're not God. If you try to take his place, if you try to be God, you're going to mess it all up. But he created you. He created me in the image of God. If you have a Bible, if you'll open it to Genesis chapter 1, we'll be starting with verse 26. If you don't have a Bible, at the end of your row there, there are some Bibles. We'd love you to pass those down and take one of those. And you are more than welcome to keep that. If you don't have a Bible at home for yourself, you are more than welcome to keep that as our gift to you this morning. If you have one of those Bibles, we are literally on page 1 and page 2 in that Bible this morning. Actually, I believe page 2 in that Bible this morning. And we're going to look at Genesis chapter 1, verse 26, and we're going to be talking about how God created the first two people. And this is what it says. Then God said, now if you remember, if you've been here or if you've read this before, God creates by speaking. He keeps saying something, and then it happens. God said, let there be light, and there was light. God said, let there be an expanse in the sky, and everything he says. God said, let there be animals. When he says it, it happens. It says, and God said, let us make man in our image and after our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the living birds in the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth. And God said, behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the face of the earth and every tree that is with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the heavens, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has breath, I have given every green plant for food. And it was so. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Now, as he creates everything else, every day he stops and he takes a look at it, and he says, God saw, and it was good. So the first day, God creates everything, he says, it's good. Second day, it's good. Third day, it's good. But when he creates Adam and Eve, when he creates the first man and woman, he stops and he says, listen, this is very good. And one of the things I want you to understand this morning, as we even look at the way God created humanity, God created us, God created you, he put so much more into it. We are the crown of his creation. We are the highest. I am awed by the heavens, but God is more awed by you than he is awed by the vast expanses of the heavens he made. You are the crown. You are the most important thing in his creation. Isn't that cool? See, we live in a world that likes to just see people, see you and me as products of random chance that we just kind of showed up here, and we're really no better than the animals. And the theory of evolution, I don't hold to it at all, but one of the things it's done is it's really robbed you and me of our meaning and value and purpose. It just said, hey, we're on this planet taking up space just like all the other animals, and we're really no more important than any of them. And so you go to a biology classroom. Here's this kid. He walks in biology 101. He sits there, and the teacher says, you know, you got here by chance. You know, a long time ago, there was a bang, and then after the bang, you know, there was all this cosmic dust, and this cosmic dust became planets, and the planets, you know, got close to a star, and the star got this perfect temperature, and there was, you know, this gooey stuff, and, you know, that gooey stuff turned into some kind of plasma, and then, you know, all of a sudden, something crawled out of it. Boom. It was swimming around the ocean, and the ocean, it got tired of water, so it grew legs, showed up on the earth. Then you had apes walking around, you know, and these apes are walking around. One day the ape decided to shave, and so it shaved, and now you got people. Boom, there we are. And what it has done, it has said, man, you're just a cosmic accident. You're no more important. And so, you know, don't feel, you know, important because you are just some weird random chance thing. The bell rings, thing. Hey, by the way, you're going to go to your new class down the hall today. It's going to be a class that teaches you how to have self-esteem. And we wonder why our kids are going, I hate myself, because we have bought into a mindset that says you have zero value or zero meaning. But as I read this account and the rest of Genesis story of God creating Adam and Eve, God, the whole point of the entire story is this. When God created you, you mattered incredibly to him. You mattered incredibly to him. And not only is that the story of Genesis chapter 1 and chapter 2, but for some reason, it is the story of the entire Bible. Now, we didn't have to. God wasn't up in heaven or just out in space going, I'm bored today and I need somebody to play with. But for some reason, in his beauty and his splendor, he decided to make you and decided to make me and decided to make Adam and Eve and decided to say, listen, these people count. And it says that we were created in his image. If you read the story, I've read chapter 1 here. Chapter 2 retells the story. And some people have said, well, chapter 2 is actually a different account. It's like they contradict, they don't make sense. And that's not what's going on at all. Chapter 1 is this panoramic view. If you have one of those cameras, then you take a panoramic view, you got this huge picture that kind of covers everything. Chapter 2 is the telephoto lens. Chapter 2, he's really going to hone in on literally how God created Adam and Eve. And what happens, God takes, it says that he created everything else, and then he takes the dust, and first he says, we're going to create man in our image, in our likeness. And he creates Adam and Eve. And here's what's really different, that's really cool. In all the other verses, everything else he created, how did he create it? I just told you. He spoke it. But when he created man, he used his hands. He didn't say, and let there be a man, boom, there it was. He said, let us make man in our image. And then it goes on to say, and he created, he formed is the idea here. And instead of just speaking us into being, he reached down and created Adam and Eve with his hands. And he invested himself into the creation of humanity. That's a beautiful thing. And so, you know, he takes the dust of the earth and he forms it into a man. Have you ever wondered, you know, here's Adam, boom. And the Bible tells us that God breathed in him the breath of life. Adam takes the first big breath. Have you ever wondered what his first thought was? What the heck am I doing? I'm naked. Woo! You know, it's just a crazy thing to think. I mean, what he was going on in his head. Wow, what a great place. Who knows? I mean, that would have been a really cool thing to be at, right? Because it's just an amazing event. Here's this first guy. He's number one. And basically, the Bible teaches us that God didn't create him as a little bitty baby. God created him with age. We don't know how old he was. You know, was he 20? Was he 25? Was he 15? Was he 40? We don't know. But God created him with some age, and he created him old enough to get married. That was important because just a little bit later, God has him look around and look at all the animals. God starts bringing the animals to him and says, all right, you name the animals. And he, you know, sees an elephant and goes, elephant. And he sees a dog, dog, aardvark, aardvark. You know, he starts naming all the animals. But one of the things that God says it's not good for him to be alone. See, all the way through the text so far, God says, it's good, it's good, it's good. Then he says, it's not good. And what is it that's not good? For man to be alone. And he brings the animals to Adam to name. But as the animals come, Adam begins to see, hey, there's two dogs. Hey, there's two elephants. Hey, there's two geese. Hey, there's two birds. And he keeps seeing that they're always together. And Adam begins to have this longing, saying, there's got to be somebody for me. And so God causes a deep sleep to fall on Adam. And the Bible tells us that he took a rib. And actually, if you really understand it, what God did is God just took a big old hunk out of his side and took that hunk out of his side and began to form a woman to say, listen, she's from you. And they woke up and looked at each other. And I know what Adam's first thought then was. Hubba, hubba. Woo, yeah, you look good. And now we have the first man and woman. And really, as you read the text, there's a little poem there. It's actually a song. Adam begins singing to her. Women always dig the guys who play guitars, Nick. There's just something about a guy in music, you know. It worked for him, you know. And Adam and Eve are on this planet, and God has invested himself in them. He has created them in his image, in his likeness. In chapter verse 26, it says, God created us in his image, his likeness. There's parallelism. It's to give emphasis. It's not two different ideas. It's really to say that we were created in a way to reflect him and to look like him and to be like him. And that's what I want to talk to you today, just briefly. I want to tell you that when God created Adam and Eve, and when God created you, he put his image, he put himself into you. He put his likeness. He made us to look a little bit like him on different levels. And he did that. That image that is in us really gives us our purpose. It really helps us understand why I'm standing on this planet. It helps me understand, what am I all about? What is my meaning for life? And if I can get a grasp on living out the image of God in myself and what that means, your life will work. It will make sense. It will fit. It will have value. It will have meaning, because ultimately our purpose flows from how God created us. And so that's what I want to tell you. I just want to tell you three things this morning. The fact that being created in the image of God is an incredible place in God's story. And it defines three purposes that we have. You have, I have. We all have these same three purposes in our life that flows from being created in the image of God. What I want to tell you, when the Bible says that we were created in his image, I really am going to try to tell you this morning what I really believe that means. What it means that we have his image and his likeness. What is our purpose? And as we talk about that, the thing I want you to understand, we're going to get to next week how we messed it all up. And every person after Adam and Eve has done the same thing, has taken the three things that God has put into us, and instead of reflecting God and being about him, we've decided to spend these three things on ourselves. And that's why Jesus came. We'll get to that. But three reasons, three purposes that I get from the fact that I am you this morning, as you're sitting where you are created in the image of God, in his likeness, to look like him. And he created you for these three things. And the first one is this: you were created to relate to God. You were created to relate to God. God formed Adam. God formed Eve. He made them in his image, in his likeness, and he put them in this incredible garden called Eden. And in this garden, man, it was the high-rent district. You and I couldn't live there because it had rivers everywhere. It had greenery. I mean, it was an awesome place. It was an oasis. The Bible calls it paradise. I mean, it was a great place to live. And Adam and Eve, you know, lived there. And the Bible teaches us that God walked in the cool of the day. God hung out. God spent time with them. When God put himself into Adam and Eve, he did that so that they could relate to him, so that they could know him. There are a lot of characteristics about God that we cannot be. I can't be omniscient. I can't know everything. I can't be sovereign, which means I can't be in control of everything. I can't even control the guy who's driving the car next to me. It drives me crazy, right? I can't control everything, but God can. I can't be omnipotent. I can't be all powerful. But there are a lot of the characteristics of God, the fact that he is love, he is holy, he is merciful, his character, that he has put into you and to me, and he's put those things into you and me because he wanted to create a level of being on this planet that would relate to him, that could talk to him, that could walk with him, that could know him, that he could know, and that could be intimate, could be close to him. And that's why you are here. You are here first and foremost to know God. And if you get that much right, the rest is going to work. You are on this planet for that very reason. See, I have a dog. My dog's name is Sadie. And she's a hunting dog. She's a great pet. But she drives me crazy sometimes. And one of the reasons she drives me crazy, she is not in my image and in my likeness. She's a dog, okay? So I can't hold a conversation with her. I can't sit and look at her and reason with her, which is what really drives me crazy, because this morning I opened my garage door. We just went out and bought this really cool collar and put all the little stakes in our yard that, you know, if she goes past a certain point, it shocks her. And when she's wearing that collar, she just stands in the middle of the yard. She will not move. It's got her totally freaked out, weirded out. She won't go anywhere. But when the collar's not on, woohoo, free for all. And I opened the garage door, and she's so fast. I mean, she flies. She got underneath that garage door before I could get to the door, and she was gone. And we've got woods behind our house, man. She was way down in the woods. I don't know if she saw a deer or a squirrel. She was gone. And I wanted to grab her by the ears and go, would you please wait for me? But no matter how much I do that, as I look her in the eye and I try to talk to her, she's just looking at me going, and she doesn't have a clue what I'm saying. It's nuts. See, I want to reason with her, but I can't because she is not on my level. She is not in my image. My son and my daughter and my other son, on the other hand, even as an infant, even as a very young toddler, I mean, Josiah is a year and a half old, and the ability to communicate, he's picked up something. I was hoping he would do it up here for you. It just, my heart goes, woohoo, it's so sweet, because he has picked up this, and he does it to everybody now. Hi. Hi. As you go out today, see if you can get him to say hi to you. It is so cute. He has this ability to reason and to communicate. And even at a year and a half old, I can relate to him in a way that I can't with my dog that I've had for 5 or 6 years now. Because there's a different level that he is like. Well, listen, when the Bible tells us that God created us in his image, he did not create the animals so that he could relate to them. He did not create the plants or anything else, but he created you and he created me on a level. He put enough of himself into us so that we could literally have a relationship with God. That is cool. The creator of this universe, the one who threw the stars into space, created you to know him. You are in his image for that very reason. And his passion, his desire, his heart is for you to have a just awesome, ongoing, deep, heartfelt relationship with him. Blaise Pascal, French philosopher, said, there's a God-shaped hole in the heart of every man that only God can fill. But you know what I found? I found that instead of a relationship, most people try to find a place where they can do religion. And by the way, if you're coming to Genesis Church because you want a different religion, this ain't the place to go. I don't believe in religion, don't like it, because I believe that everything that God has created us for cries out relationship. Religion says, if I keep this list and I do this series of do's and don'ts and I'm a good person and I go to church so often and if I do, you know, if I get my scales just right, God's going to be okay with me. Could you imagine if your children responded to you that way? They don't ever talk to you, they don't ever relate to you, but they keep your little list, and they think just by keeping the list, if I can clean my room and do this, 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 and this, I'm okay with mom, I'm okay with dad. And while those things are important, listen, more than those things, I want my kids to crawl up on my lap and tell me that they love me. I want my kids to hang out with me. I want my kids to be relational with me. And God has created you the same way. He hasn't created you so that you can go find someplace to keep the list. He has created you because he wants you to love him, to be crazy in love with him. Ultimately, that's what we're about. I just want to let you know that ultimately, I am somebody who is just, I've made so many mistakes, and I've got so many issues and problems. And if you look up here and say, hey, there's a guy who's got it all together, just ask my wife. I don't. But I've learned that Jesus is awesome, and I'm just nuts about him. I'm just crazy in love with Jesus. Because of what he's done for me, because he gave his life for me, and because he has given me the opportunity to have a relationship with my creator. I'm just crazy in love with him. And listen, that's my desire for you, not to give you a list of things that you have to do to somehow get to a distant God. I want you to understand what it means to be in love with Jesus. Now, my wife, there are things that I do that are on her list, but I do them because I love her, not because I'm trying to get her to love me. God loves you. That's settled. He proved it by sending Jesus. Done. And he wants you to be in love with him and have a relationship with him. One of my favorite things in life is when my daughter and my son, but my daughter's just really bought into this, walks up to me and says, Daddy, can we go play in the bed? That is her way of saying, I haven't spent enough time with you, and I want to go hang out with you. And we'll go up to my bedroom. And I'll throw her, first of all, I go up first. That's the whole, you know, we've got like a system. Remember, my daughter's organized. It's got to be a certain way. It's the same way every time, okay? I go up and I crawl in my bed and I turn out the lights and I turn on the TV and I act like I'm sound asleep. And if she walks in the room and I'm looking at TV, she'll walk back out. I've got to be asleep. Even though she knows I'm not asleep, I've got to be asleep, okay? It's got to be a certain way. And so I'll start doing a snoring thing, and she'll sneak up on the bed like I don't know she's there, okay? She'll sneak up on the bed, crawl up on top of there, and she'll get real close to me, and then all of a sudden she'll go airborne. Wah! Bam! And she'll land on me, and I'll flip her over, and I'll start tickling her, and just about that time I'll hear these big old feet, boom, 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 boom. That's my son Andy, 14 years old, you know. Here he comes upstairs, plan a bed, woohoo! And my kids jump in a bed, and we just wrestle, man. It's like WWF all over my bed. I'm tickling them, holding them down. They like double team me, and I'll flip them over. And while I got Andy down, Alex is jumping on me. And we'll just roll around and have a great time on the bed. And listen, guys, when that happens in my life, when that happens in my life, it is my kids and I saying, more than homework, more than cleaning your room, what I want you to understand is I'm crazy about you, and I want you to be crazy about me. Listen, guys, God wants us to have that kind of awesome relationship where our life revolves around playing on the bed with him, knowing him, intimacy. He created you for that, image of God. The second thing, when it talks about the image of God, not only did he create us to relate to him, but he created us to reflect God. He created us to reflect God. The Bible says that let us make man in our image after our likeness. The image and likeness, like I said, are two words that are just kind of parallelism, that they're side by side to create emphasis. But here's the amazing thing. In Exodus chapter 20, verse 4, God, in one of the Ten Commandments, says, you will not make an image to look like me. You will not make a graven image. You will not make idols. I do not want idols created by your hands, so that when people look at things, they look at those things, and when they look at those things, you say, that's what my God looks like. You know why he did that? For a long time, I just knew idolatry wasn't good, but I used to think idolatry was like God saying no other gods. But if you study the Ten Commandments, the first commandment, no other gods. And then he says, no idols. And what God is trying to teach his people when he does that, he's trying to say, listen, on this planet, there is only one representation of me. It's you. Don't create something else to look like me. If I want something to look like me and people to look at something and see me, I want it to be you, not something you make. He created us in his image to represent him. To reflect him on this planet, to be an image of what he looks like, to be a shadow. The word image means a shadow, a reflection. It even is used sometimes as a carving. And when this planet looks at us, we are to be on this planet to represent him, to be his ambassadors, to be the ones who go in his place, okay? That is why every mom every morning looks at their, you know, little 8-year-old boy and says, you be sure to put clean underwear on. Why? Because if something happens to you today, I don't want somebody saying that you have dirty underwear because I better think you'll have a bad mom and I just don't take it, I don't do the laundry. That's why, you know, we know that our kids, when they go to school, they are a reflection of who we are. Being in youth ministry all these years, I got to tell you that I looked at the kids. It was impossible for me to look at kids and not say, this is what their parents are like. You knew good kids who obeyed and who just were awesome kids were a reflection of their parents. You knew kids who were just holy terrors were also a reflection of their parents. The Bible tells us that we're to honor our father and mother. That's what it means. We're to live our life in such a way that we make our parents look good. And listen, what the Bible's teaching us here, God created you in his image. He created you in his likeness. He created you as a representation of himself so that as you and I live on this planet, we represent him. The third thing it teaches us, the image of God teaches us, is that we're created to represent God. We relate to God, we reflect God, and we represent God. Look at verse 28, if you had your Bibles open there. He says, God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea and the birds of the heavens and every living thing that moves on the earth. He says, have dominion, be fruitful and multiply. What he's saying is, listen, I want a whole bunch of people on this planet because one of you isn't enough. It takes a whole world of people to really reflect me and represent me. And he says, subdue it and have dominion. And we've kind of take that like, oh, I'm subduing the earth. I'm having dominion. But what God is saying is God is saying, all right, I created this universe, but I also created this planet. I'm going to take care of the universe. I put you in charge of the planet. That's why recycling is a good idea. That's why taking care of this place is a good idea, because God put people in charge. Now, we've messed it up. Our sin and our failures mess that up, but he put us in charge to represent him. And so this is what I want you to understand. When God created you, he created me, he created us so that we would, first of all, have this unbelievable relationship with him, so that we would be a reflection of him in our character and in our being, and that we would represent him on this planet. And that is what we are to be about. If you are living those three things in your life, you are fulfilling your purpose. You are living out what it means to be in the image of God. The problem is that we take all three of these things and we spend it on ourselves. And in chapter 2, what goes on here is that God ultimately shows us the realms that this takes place. Shows us the realms. Where does this? He's actually given us three little petri dishes to live out these three purposes, to live out what it means to be in the image of God, to relate to him, to reflect him, to represent him. And the first one is in creation itself. Look at this verse, chapter 2, verse 15. He says, the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and to keep it. See, God gave Adam a job. You know, Adam wasn't sitting around all day in a, you know, Barco lounge or watching ESPN eating bonbons. God gave Adam a job. God said, listen, I'm putting you out here. You're to work. You're going to be the gardener. That was man's first job, was to be a gardener. I'm glad I wasn't Adam. I don't like gardening, okay? My wife would have loved that job, you know? And so if Adam and Eve were there together, you know, if it was us, she'd have been cool with it, and I'd have done it because I wanted to make her happy. But I don't like gardening. She loves gardening. God made Adam a gardener. He gave him a job, and that job was, this is my garden. You take care of it. I created this. It's beautiful. It's incredible. Adam, look around. Look at how beautiful the plants and animals. My place. You care for it. And he gave him a job. He gave him a place to live this out. And in creation, listen, we need to work. The Bible teaches us work is a good thing. But wherever we live out our lives and work, whether it's in our home as a mom or whether it's at a place of employment or at a school, wherever that is, God has given you a place to live out your relationship with God, to be a reflection of God, to represent God. That's what he's done. He did that with Adam. He's done that with us. The second area is in temptation. Temptation. Genesis 2:16 says this. The Lord God commanded the man, saying, you will surely eat of the tree of the garden, but of the tree of knowledge of good and evil you will not eat, for in that day you will eat of it, you will surely die. God put two trees in a garden, and right in the middle of the garden. One was the tree of life, which was a representation of the fact that we were created to go on living. But the other was this tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And I used to look at that going, why did God put a tree that helped people know what's right and wrong? And then when he made that tree, tell us we couldn't eat of it. Does God want us to go around being ignorant? And that's not what this tree is. The tree of knowledge of good and evil is more experiential knowledge than it is wisdom knowledge. It's like this. Your child's 4, and you're cooking. And you look at that child and you say, listen, I know. Do not touch that. It is hot. What's your child naturally do? Don't touch it. It's hot. It's not a good idea. You don't want to have experiential knowledge of that being hot. Trust your mom. It's hot. And your 16-year-old kid comes to you and you say, listen, let me tell you, drugs, bad idea. Don't do it. We do not have to have experiential knowledge of everything to understand the evil in it. But what God did is he gave them a temptation. He actually put them in a garden. He created them in his image, and then he gave them a choice. He said, you can choose the tree of life and to live in trust and faith in me and understand the wisdom and knowledge I've given you. Or you can say, I want to do things myself. I don't want to trust that you've told me it's good and bad. I want to experience good and bad myself. That was the choice. And I have 1,000 of these decisions every day. And each time I come to that decision, I can choose to relate to God, to be crazy in love with him, to be a reflection of him, and to represent him. Or I can choose to eat the fruit. Every day.